Hello and welcome to Vikings Territory Breakdown. We're back here for another week of Vikings analysis, and the Vikings did it again. I'm here with Mark Craig from the Star Tribune, StarTribune.com, longtime NFL insider and Vikings reporter, Hall of Fame voter. He's back as well. Mark, what do you think of this team? I mean, if you haven't had to be resuscitated in the press box after watching these guys, thinking, what am I going to do to get into meet my deadline with these cardiac kids? What do you think about
that? Yeah, we hope that the Cowboys game doesn't go the same way because it's a 7:20 start. So, yeah, Zim, as he's walking out of his press conference, he looked at me and said, I'm worn out. And I can imagine everyone sitting at home is kind of worn out from how, you know, back-to-back weeks like this, you've had a lead that was, you know, seemed like there's no way you can blow it. You blow it, and then you come back and you win the game. So it's, you know, they're back to 3-3. People – the Zimmer haters probably don't like it, but, now they get a week to kind of get some guys healthy. Then they got the Cowboys. And, I look at that game, that Cowboys game, but, you know, where it's played and when it's played, I mean, that's going to be a lot of electricity in that building. It's going to be help the Vikings, I think. So I wouldn't just – I know we're penciling in wins and losses down the road here, but I wouldn't count that as a loss just yet.
You know, it's funny you talk about the way the Vikings have played the last several weeks, most of the weeks this year, you know, having leads and coming back and getting it back and giving it up and getting it back. And it's kind of been the way the NFL has been. I mean, there's been so many overtime games and there's been so many games that have come down the wire. I mean, last night we saw on Monday night the Bills and the Tennessee Titans do it as well. And Sunday night's more of the same. I don't know. Maybe they said, okay, we got to get the fans back and welcome them back. Crazy game.
Well, yeah, then they're doing a good job with it. I mean, it's as close as this league has always been. This is the closest I've seen games, you know, every single week. And I think I had to count last week and I wrote a story about just all the games that have been decided in the last minute or overtime. I think we're up to like 22 now, and there's been 8 overtime games, I believe, in 6 weeks, if not a couple more. It's been exciting. It's not the most stellar play. You look at the Vikings. I mean, they never should have been involved in a situation like this against the Lions at home or against a Panthers team that was, you know, Sam Darnold looked as bad as you can look at playing quarterback, and somehow he puts together a 96-yard drive to tie the game with the 2-point conversion, converting a 4th and 10 from his 4-yard line. It's almost like it's a movie that you wouldn't believe if you were watching it. So, you know, it's not the greatest play in the world, but it is exciting. It's fun to watch.
I'll make you explain that one in a little bit later because I still don't understand it. But I'm just glad that I'm not in the press box like you are, because with all this, I'd probably be dead by this point. But let's start in. Kirk Cousins was the man of the hour on Sunday. He put him in position twice to win this thing, and the second time he came through, he was 33 of 48 for 373 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a 112.6 QB rating. He's been lights out the last couple of weeks. And I said last week, you know, the Kirk haters are going to have to rethink things. They're going to have to find another punching bag, because he has played great this year. He has made comebacks when we didn't even think this was part of his arsenal, you know, late game comebacks. And he has been everything you want him to be in that position. Now, has he put anybody away yet? No, but I don't care. He's gotten the win the last 2 weeks, and that's been great to get him back through to 3-3.
Well, I mean, he's done it. Not only has he done it 4 times in 6 weeks, in 2 of those 4 weeks, he's done it twice. In Cincinnati, he led him back to the game-tying field goal to send it into overtime. He's moving him down the field when Dalvin fumbles. In this game, it's the reverse. He moved him. He had what, 42 seconds left to move him into position for a game tie, game winning field goal. They missed that one. Goes to overtime. They get the coin toss, and then he leads him down and they score the touchdown to win the game. They don't even put it in the kicker's foot again. So, you know, four times, or he's done six times in 6 weeks in four of those games. You know, it's just, this is exactly what you want whenever you go out and you, now it's been a while, it's been a long time coming. And I see, you know, there's times where I see both sets of the, both sides of the Kirk Cousins fight. And I always, I know I'm down the middle because when he plays well and I write that he plays well, I get ripped by the people who don't like him. Whenever he doesn't play well and I say that, you get ripped by the people who do like him. So he right now in this season, he's doing exactly what he's supposed to do. He's got the arm to do it, to make all these throws. The question was, would he have the time? And I know the offensive line is not perfect, but you don't do these things that he's doing at the end of games without an offensive line that's coming together.
You know, you're right about that. I thought it was interesting. I saw somebody put the last play to KJ Osborne on a video clip online today, and they said if you think Kirk is all about just check down Kirk, look at this. He had Adam Thielen coming across the middle short. It was like 2nd and 13, and he could have taken Adam. He's wide open. There was nobody near him, you know, right in his vision, and he passed by and threaded that one into KJ instead. So that's a heck of a decision. That's a heck of a play. It's probably a risky decision, but, you know, he's got the accuracy that can get that, and we saw that earlier with the touchdown to Thielen. But are you seeing him – his confidence built as this kind of stuff happens week after week? I mean, does he seem to have a different demeanor? Is he, you know, in the past, you see a guy show up on Monday, you know, just kind of having to go through the motions, you know, with the media and stuff because of another loss that they should have won or whatever. But it, you know, is he got a little more swagger? Is the confidence building? Because it sure seems like it's showing on the field.
Well, I think what's showing on the field is that he's got the time to do this. He's got the time, he's obviously developing a lot of trust in KJ Osborne, and as well he should. Going back to that first game in Cincinnati, where it's 4th and 4, Kirk throws that bullet into a small window, and KJ dives and makes that catch to extend the drive that led to the game tying 53-yard field goal. He's been doing that. KJ's been doing that at the end of games all year. And he also got a nice little separation there at the goal line. I think Kirk, as accurate as Kirk is, that was enough separation for him to take that risk and make it less of a risk because of the separation that, I mean, it wasn't a lot, but it was just enough where Kirk Cousins can hit that play for that touchdown. As far as the confidence, I don't think he ever lacked confidence. I think what he lacks is the ability to deal with guys being thrown at his legs and guys on the edge and not being able to step up. He's not that type of quarterback. He's not a type of quarterback. He can get outside the pocket a little bit and do some things, but he's not going to do it consistently. And what we're seeing is what's building the confidence and creating him right now is that offensive line giving him time to do this.
Well, you know, there was a little controversy though. Zimmer punched him after or did something to him. He said he grabbed him and shoved him after the game and said, you know, you like that back at him. So, you know, where's the controversy this week? These guys just can't.
Yeah. When you're winning, you're pretty happy, you know? So yeah, he had mentioned that I think he got the jump on him first. So he pushed him first. And pushed him pretty hard because he really came after Zim against the Lions. So
that's right. Well, it sounds like you're kind of itching to talk about the offensive line. We saw Christian Darrisaw for his NFL starting debut on Sunday, and it looked like he acquitted himself pretty well. What are your thoughts on his performance? And it sounds like he's just what the offensive line needs.
Yeah, I mean, he looks ready made. He looks like a first round draft pick who starts from day one. He just happened to have an injury. It's not too big for him. His body's perfect. If you watch him play, you watch Rashad Hill play. I love Rashad Hill, but Rashad Hill is his center of gravity is up around his shoulders. And this guy, the way he's built, he's stronger, and his center of gravity is just right there. You don't see him reaching for guys. You don't see him having to lean much. He's just kind of and this is only in his second game playing the position. He's not saying he's dominating anyone, but he's it's not too big for him, and he's going to get better. His run blocking is solid. The cut that C.J. Ham made was 6 yards downfield on that third and one. It came after he followed Darisaw and Conklin to get the first down, an easy first down. And then, you know, 250-pound man puts his foot in the ground like Dalvin Cook and goes the other way. That was a fantastic cut, which is all I was going to write about. When it was when it's a two-score game and there's 10 minutes left or whatever it was, 4 minutes, I'm writing about C.J. Ham and that cut and how that kind of jump-started the offense. And then all of a sudden, you know, a typical Vikings game unfolds and they blow the lead. But I do like how Darisaw is playing. He's better than Hill. I mean, people last week when they were saying, you know, should he start? I'm thinking, why wouldn't he start? He was in when they were rotating against the Lions, he was the better tackle. And, you know, Rashad Hill got pushed over with one arm, he was off balance, gets shoved over with it on that sack to open up the second half. To me, it was no question who would start that game. It'd be Darisaw.
Yeah, it was just great to see. I think we've all been waiting for it since he was drafted. But let's jump over. You know, there was no sacks allowed, only three QB hits. And Alvin Cook quietly had 140 yards on the ground. So it was a major improvement. But there were some problems on the line. They had plenty of penalties, and a lot of it seemed to center around someone you wrote about this week, right guard Uli Odu. Can't even see if that's the right way to say his name.
But Aliudo, yeah.
Aliudo. Talk about the game he had and what's up there.
Well, obviously, when you're not talking about him, they do a good job. But when you're talking about him, it's when you have a false start like he did, and he had three holding penalties, two were accepted. So, you know, that's not good, obviously. But he is, you know, there's much more to a game than just those three plays. I mean, the way the offensive line played, it can't be just one guy doing it well. Like going back to Darisaw, there was that 14-yard run, I think, in the third quarter where Darisaw turns his guy. Like he just kind of mauls the guy this way, and Cook comes right off his shoulder. But you're seeing, like, a lot of strength from Udo that you didn't see. Like, when we were watching Dozier last year try to, you know, hold, you know, stay firm in the pocket, you just weren't seeing it. He wasn't strong enough to do it. Udo is a guy that is definitely strong enough to hold up in there and also run block really well. He's in, and Zimmer made reference to this when I asked him a question for that story last week about how he tends to reach a little bit. And it's just his tendency as a tackle. Maybe you get away with a little bit more inside. You got to keep your arms in. So he's working on that. So he's, you know, it's only six NFL starts. So there's definitely he's not going to be perfect right away. So he's definitely a guy that can play at that position, and he'll only get better.
Sounds like someone's barking in disagreement. Is that Wyatt Davis?
Yeah. The neighbor's dog chooses to have the dog barking hour right now. So
is Wyatt Davis not in there for a reason then? You're still high on Udo despite the game?
Oh, yeah. I'm high on this offensive line playing the way it's played to get Kirk Cousins into these situations at end of games. It's not just, you know, the offensive line plays together. It's not, I wouldn't want to go when they're playing, when they have games like this where Kirk is able to perform like this. I wouldn't want to have, like, be plugging a rookie in at right guard because someone had some holding penalties. It's not a meltdown situation by any means. It's a, you know, you got to keep playing and get better situation. And, you know, right now, third and, you know, 3-3, that you keep that line together and you just keep going forward.
So it's interesting, and just to hear you talk about, you know, size, Udo is probably bigger than Davis. You know, and you were talking about the center of gravity over on the left tackle situation. Really says, you know, has a lot to do with how these guys perform, not only if they're strong or fast or what have you, but the way they're built and the way they can. Do you see Davis got the size and strength and physique to be a decent lineman in this league, you think?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, he's a really good player, but he's a rookie and he's not a first round draft pick for a reason. It took, you know, Udo was a seventh round or sixth round or whatever he was. He was a project. This Davis is not a project, but he's not a plug and play guy either. So like that was kind of assumed on draft day, you know, but nobody really knew that Udo was going to move into to guard. So I think they got the guys right now that they need to going forward. You know, Davis is a guy for, you know, for the future. Dave, who knows, maybe Davis is a center in the future. Yeah. So that Bradbury, I think, is playing better with the bigger guards next to him. You know, the guy on his bumpers there. But who knows, maybe Davis is a guy that plays center down the road.
That's a good point. You know, moving from the line to some of the higher profile guys, Dalvin Cook coming back from injury had one of the most quiet 140-yard rushing games I've ever seen. I mean, it ended up being like after we saw what Derrick Henry did last night, he was the third highest rushing total for a running back this past week. And you didn't even really know what was happening. I think the whole offense was so piecemeal back and forth, going here, going there, and a lot of mix and a lot of balance that, you know, the Lions were opening the holes, and when he had the opportunity, Dalvin was picking up some yards. What did you see from his performance?
Oh, I saw a guy that was, you know, a lot closer to 100% than he was the last couple of weeks. I mean, that whole game was up until that blocked punt in the third quarter. That was a kind of a sluggish, 12-10, whatever it was, game, two-point game. Neither offense, you know, obviously the Carolina was horrendous. And I think Darnold might have been a 0.0 passer rating at that point. But after that block punt, the game kind of came alive, and you saw that next drive is when CJ Ham had that run on third and one for a 30-yard gain, which was the longest play of the game up to that point. And then I believe right after that is when Thielen catches a 35-yard pass, and things just kind of came alive. And once it came alive, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Cook, you know, got a lot of those numbers in that burst in the second half, which is what we've been, you know, waiting to see for so long. Is this offense has been good in the first half, especially the first drives, but you didn't see a lot in the second half. So you know, two touchdowns in the third quarter. And then, you know, so yeah, it was kind of you look up and you see the 40 yards. It's, and also the team as a whole having 571 yards. I wouldn't have guessed that until I saw the stat sheet. It's like the fourth highest maybe of either the Zimmer era or ever. I don't know. Yeah. But it's just how the game went.
You know, I thought if anybody had just not a superlative game, was Justin Jefferson. He had a drop. He had a fumble. He had a he didn't seem his usual brilliant self, and just, you know, running up and down, getting open. And he did get 80 yards, but it was just like, you know, on a lot more targets and a lot less receptions, whereas Adam Thielen had caught 11 of 13 balls and had this just ridiculous touchdown catch. You know, how Kirk threaded it in there, and Thielen was with concentration. I swear he's got hands like frog tongues, you know, the way he grabs the balls. And so he had a great game. It was nice to see they brought him back into the mix. But even more than that, it was great to see another week where KJ Osborne shined, and that he's really solidified himself as the wide receiver three. Had a great game, had a game winner. And I know you talked to him and wrote about him this week. What are your thoughts on how KJ is doing in that spot?
Yeah, I mean, what doesn't show up in the stat sheet is how post-snap, and Kirk Cousins talked about this, pre-snap, that touchdown, that route to KJ didn't look good. Said, but post-snap, the reaction to the by the defense was the corner sitting on Jefferson, because Jefferson is a great player. The corner kind of hesitating, thinking almost thinking for sure it's going to go there, and then that opens up things for KJ, and they have the trust in KJ now. If you look at the drives, including the, you know, where they had the attempt for the game-winning field goal, he catches two balls on that drive for 16 yards, 16 of the 46 yards that they had. Then they go to overtime, and he catches a third down ball for 13 yards, and then he catches the touchdown. So in those two drives, he has four catches for 56 yards, two first downs, and a touchdown. So, you know, Thielen's great, Jefferson's great, but whenever the game gets close and everyone's looking at those guys, here's KJ Osborne now, and that's something we wouldn't ever have seen had, you know, I mean, it's funny how the NFL works. They always talk about next man up, and we'll go, oh, yeah, right. Well, this guy didn't play one down as a rookie on offense. Chad Beebe gets hurt. B.C. Johnson gets hurt. And then you're basically your third receiver, who's a tight end, Irv Smith, gets hurt. Suddenly, KJ is your third target, and it's become, you know, this is why, you know, you get for depth, and you know, we may have never thought this in a million years, but you know, this guy, you know, steps up and does it. So, hats off to the, you know, to a day three pick from 2020.
There's one guy that you're certainly seeing some confidence build. I mean, he even did the Stephon Diggs throw your helmet at the end after he scored that winning touchdown.
Yeah,
KJ, it looks like it's you know, struggled last year, and it just seemed to be, you know, with opportunity comes, you know, if you can take advantage of it, comes competence and then confidence. It's nice to see, and I'm sorry to say we may be seeing the last of BB and BC, you know, who have been both kind of hung on for several years, just, you know, weren't they going to be the third receiver on this team? And I don't know, KJ's trying to make a statement for his own self there. So,
yeah. And then, you know, these guys don't play forever. So Thielen, I mean, how many years he has left. So yeah, it's, this guy's got a good future. And also Westbrook, I think, has looked pretty good as a four receiver. So you're seeing, you know, they were forced to kind of get away from their all the tight ends that they played by injury and Rudolph leaving. And I think they're showing that they can play with, you know, four receivers on the field.
Yeah, and I guess Kirk threw it around to seven different receivers on Sunday and really spread the ball around. And Adam Thielen mentioned that after in his post-game remarks. So it was – I think that bodes well going forward. If you can have that many receivers that he can depend on, and Kirk is always been a guy that's going to look over the field and, you know, go through his progression, see his reads, and see who he wants to throw to. So if you got guys you can throw to that you can trust to catch it, that's great to open up things for a running back like Dalvin Cook, just waiting for the opportunity to get the ball back.
And it also helps to have the personalities. You know, Thielen's got a great personality, team personality. Jefferson, so far has got that team mentality, I believe. Stephon Diggs, not so much. So I was, when Thielen came alive in that year, Stephon Diggs, you know, might have said all the right things in public, but he didn't like it. So these receivers, you know, they got to be talented, but they also got to work within the team. And I think that they got, I mean, obviously KJ's not going to be, you know, complaining if he doesn't get the ball. But hats off to, like, say, a Thielen, if he has a two-catch game or whatever and doesn't complain, or Justin Jefferson doesn't get the game-winning touchdown. They want to win the game. So they got a pretty good situation going at receiver right now.
No, yeah, it would be nice to keep it static for a while and keep these guys and just let them get better together rather than having somebody complain and want to leave. On the other side of the ball, the defense had a really good game. I think it came against a weaker and debilitated offense. As you mentioned earlier, Sam Darnold, he was making us all scratch our heads there for most of the game. What did you how much credit can you give the defense for this win? I mean, they did not seem – the Panthers just didn't play like they had earlier in the year, and the defense with a couple turnovers and – or three turnovers that were all timely and all valued, really kind of kept them in check until the offense in the second half, in the third quarter, started putting up some touchdowns on the board.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I said Christian McCaffrey might win MVP just based on his absence and what he's done to that team. But, you know, if they're 3-0, we always were all saying that Sam Darnold is turned around and everything. Well, he got, they went 3-0 with McCaffrey. McCaffrey gets hurt. They go 0-3 without him. And they look awful. The first play of the game, Sam Darnold had his most time to throw. He's actually moving around, looking around. He could have sat down and thought about it for a minute. Then he turned and he throws late to the corner, and Breshad Breeland makes an interception there. So, you know, he played awful from the first snap. And then they get to that when it's 4th and 10 at his own 4, and the Vikings, you know, Zimmer even talked about, do we rush and hit this guy or do we play cover? And he's like, well, you know, there's 2 minutes left. There's 2 minutes left and we need to just 96 yards to go. We're going to play cover. Well, they play cover 2, and Darnold, one thing he can do is he's got that great arm, and he just threw it over Kendrick's head, and the safety Woods couldn't come over in time. So they get a 41-yard reception, and then they came alive after that. So, you know, the guy, he played terrible, but the guy is extreme. There's a reason he was picked where he was. He's got a great arm talent and can really air it out when he has to.
Yes, they put together a 96-yard drive just when you think the Vikings, all right, you know, they make a great play to put them down with a punt down near the goal line. And he said, okay, here we go. This game, you know, the defense is just going to continue what they're doing. And all of a sudden, Sam Darnold comes alive, throws a 41-yard pass up the middle on 4th down, and they go up the field 96 yards for the tying touchdown. What the hell was going on there?
Well, like I said, they
Mark, it's on you. It's all you. Come on.
Yeah.
What's going on?
Well, I mean, Zimmer, you know, yeah, Zimmer's like, do we rush him right there? You know, and maybe end the game with a sack in the end zone, or if you take that chance, then he might, that with that great arm, he gets the ball over your head. So, you know, they chose to like try and bleed it out slowly, and that one pass, and then all of a sudden they're back in the game. So, you know, Zimmer was pretty aggressive in that game. There were some sacks where there's a great stunt where Lynch got his sack with he and Kendricks had a game going up front. So Zimmer was aggressive, but in that situation, he wasn't aggressive. And, you know, I sort of understand what he's saying. You know, like you don't do a cover 0 blitz and then have a 96-yard touchdown. But yeah, the defense needs to tighten it up. You know, in that situation after that, you know, after they make that one, then kind of let's, you know, tighten it up a little bit.
Yeah, it's always a decision to be made. I mean, if you're gonna overload in one area, you're gonna be exposing yourself somewhere else. And I think it's sometimes when we watch the game, we don't take that into consideration. We just expect everybody to be in their position and lined up to make the play. But if you got a quarterback that can recognize that and find the open guy, they're gonna hurt you, even if it's in a situation like that.
Yeah, I don't know how much he can recognize and get, but what he's got is a great arm. And in a desperate situation like that, you know, he's going to be able to throw a dart over your, as good as Kendricks is in coverage, that is a hard, hard cover for a middle linebacker 40 yards down the field to be able to get back there. And he was closer than a lot of middle linebackers. That's what made Brocker maybe the greatest cover 2 middle linebacker ever, because he was like 10 feet tall and he would go down, he'd be 40 yards downfield with his arm in the air and swatting away balls, and obviously great up near the line too. But that's a hard thing for a guy to do. And Kendricks is an all-pro caliber type middle linebacker, and he couldn't get back there in time to make that stop.
The defensive line has played well this year. They're leading the league in sacks right now. It was 21. They had 23 all last year, and already they have 21 in 6 games. That's got to make a difference for that defense, and hopefully we'll need that, as we'll talk in a minute about Patrick Peterson's absence. But talk about that defensive front and what they're doing for the team so far.
Yeah, I mean it's night and day. I mean we've talked a few times about that Christmas Day game. It was embarrassing. I mean, and really their defensive line was kind of embarrassing from the start with Danielle Hunter going out. They bring in Yannick for a while. He played six games, at this point last year is when they traded him after six games, and he held his lead in sacks, I think with five or six for the entire year. So the guy you traded in week six, after week six, was the guy who led you in sacks at the end of the year. And if you also look at those 23 sacks, it was like 126 yards and losses. It was a franchise low for sacks and yardage off sacks. They couldn't get anywhere. They had Ode Enigbu at right end, right end. And, the tackles were, subpar. But this year, even now, Pierce, it'd be nice if they get Pierce back fairly soon, because he's an important piece. Although Armon Watts played well on Sunday, had a sack and a strip. He's a versatile guy that can play the nose or the three technique. But it's night and day what their defensive line is now compared to last year. And Everson Griffin, I mean, who would have thought that, he's become more than a situational pass rusher. Now, they do have to, and they've said this before, Andre Patterson has mentioned it, that you got to guard against playing him too much, because you want him around toward the end of the year. But I think right now you're not worried about week 17, 18 snaps. You're worried about getting back in the playoff picture. So if they have to, extend Everson a little bit, they're going to have to do it, because he's clearly their second best defensive end. Might be their best one right now, actually. And yeah. So
they're going to need a great play out of that unit going forward, because the Vikings lost Patrick Peterson to the IR with a hamstring. I don't know if it's pull tear or what's going on there. Maybe it's what did they say? Cramps. I don't think so.
No.
But yeah, they've come out since and said it's a hamstring injury. And so he's out 3 weeks for sure. They're talking about maybe coming back for the Packers game, but in the next 3 weeks, you got the Cowboys, Ravens, and Chargers with all decent quarterbacks there. And on the back end of that is Aaron Rodgers. So, how are they going to do with this? Is it going to be good enough with Breland and Dantzler to pick up the slack at corner? What do you see happening there?
Well, it'll be Dantzler, getting the first crack, and I think he has played better than he did early in the year. He did give up after Peterson went out. He gave up a completion there on fourth down, the fourth and sixth completion on that tying drive. So, he's not Peterson. He's not your ideal guy that you'd want in there. But I do think, that he's come on. He's got experience. You also have Chris Boyd, who I think is capable. I haven't seen him. He's a real good special teams player, although he had a penalty on Sunday. But he's a capable guy. Harrison Hand's coming off the COVID list. So there's some depth there. But, yeah, it's going to be a drop-off. I think Peterson goes on – when a guy goes unnoticed, kind of like Peterson has, when people are asking, did he play well, did he not play well, that usually means that they played well, because you're not the mistakes aren't glaring. So I think, yeah, it's gonna definitely make an impact. But, how you make up for that, especially when you're at home on Halloween night, at US Bank Stadium, is the crowd and the pass rush takes over, and that makes the coverage a lot easier than you would playing Aaron Rodgers in an empty stadium.
I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about Greg Joseph, the place kicker for the Vikings. He missed two field goals that probably could have won it for them earlier had he made one. And in fact, I don't know if it was the same the reason why, but they stopped kicking extra points in the game as well. But he's going to have good, but he had some good moments, because, kicked a long one, I think, late in the game, and he kicked some early. Is that what we're going to get with this guy? Or is he ever going to get really consistent, or we can just depend on him, not Justin Tucker like, but certainly maybe better than we've seen around here in the past, recent past?
Well, yeah, he's not Justin Tucker. Justin Tucker, with this guy, or with a lot of these kickers now, 1 week you're talking about should they get rid of him. Next week you're talking about how great a kick he made. He's a keeper, but you're going to have games where he's not Justin Tucker. And what concerned me more than the two misses was just how badly he missed them. just how wide right they were. I mean, both of them were kind of in the same area, really wide right. Something was going on. And also they had mentioned that the wind and that going that direction was a little stronger. You know, I didn't see it with the ribbons on top of the uprights, but they were saying that it was he was kind of at the farthest he could attempt one going that way. So I would say he's their kicker. He's a guy that, you know, you can't be getting rid of a guy if he misses some kicks, especially when he's making 50 yarders and he's making, he made a game tying one in week one. He made a game winner last week. So this guy certainly has been, the attention has been on him, unlike probably any other kicker for the first six games of their career. I mean, and that's just the way this year is. It's the kickers are deciding games more than ever before.
I heard someone talking this week that all the misses that he's had have come from when he's on the right hash. I don't know if that's for sure. I haven't gone back and looked at the film.
Yeah,
maybe that's something the Vikings want to think about. I also heard Zimmer saying nice things despite the misses in the game, still saying nice things about him. So he's probably taking a different approach. And it's kind of like you and I here, you know, the Vikings win, so we agree on everything. So this isn't very good. We're going to have to regroup here now and come back to see if we can get something we can argue about.
We might have some controversy because I'm about ready to jump out the window and kill this dog over here. So I don't know if you guys can hear it, but
again, it's not very loud.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't. I probably shouldn't admit this on air, but the dog's life is it's coming to an end here soon.
Well, we'd love to see that.
Yeah,
that might get us some views. Anyway, we'll be right back with the next segment where we're looking ahead to the bye and the week after that, and talk about a few more things on Viking Territory Breakdown. Come on back. Welcome back to Vikings Territory Breakdown with Mark Craig, who, if he showed his hands, he's probably got some blood on him from just having attacked the neighbor's dog. You know, he's maybe just put a muzzle on him. We don't want PETA to come after us. So I hope you just put him aside nicely, because I don't hear him for the
night. I'm going to keep that internal, Joe.
Okay, that's probably a good idea.
Can't talk about that.
Yeah. So. It's the bye week. It's the bye week for the Minnesota Vikings. And, you know, even though it's pretty early this year, it's not too early, but it's, you know, the Vikings seem to have more often than not one of them in mid to late October. They're always around my wife's birthday, and she thinks it's because it's for her, so I can take the week off. But I think it's a good week for them. I mean, they got a couple receivers that were banged up. They got Dalvin coming off injury. They lost Peterson, so they can – hopefully give him some healing time. But, you know, and as you mentioned, getting Michael Pierce back. So they're not too banged up, but I think it comes at a good time. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, with Peterson, it's not gonna, a week is not going to help Peterson. Obviously, he's got to be out 3 weeks. You know, I think it's good for them to have it only because, you know, they fought so hard to get back to 3-3. They very well could be, yeah, as we all know, they could be the same situation they were in last year at 1-5. So they've expended a lot of energy to get to 3-3, and they got a huge stretch coming up against some really good, you know, the Cowboys at home, and then going to the Ravens, to the Chargers, and then back home against the Packers. So it's kind of a probably a good time to take a breath, you know, do some self-scouting as they do, rest up, and then, you know, although the Cowboys have a bye week this week too, so it's not like you're catching the Cowboys coming off a play-in this week. So, but I do think it helps to just kind of regenerate right now for them.
You know, you make a good point when you talk about their record. Everybody talks about they're a couple plays away from 5-1. Nobody ever mentions that they're a couple plays away from 1-5. You know, it's just like as a golfer. I mean, you and I trade back and forth. What we did, we say, oh my goodness, mm-hmm. I had a 38 with an 8, you know, or something,
right.
You know, and we never realized that, you know, those other ones that we were making power birdie, they could have gone the other
way. So yeah, when you make the 40 footer for par, you don't come out and say, you know, I could have had a 6 there, you know.
It just doesn't happen in the NFL either. Should we be concerned about this team that they are they are just 3-3. I mean, they there are times they looked like they could be better. They looked great against Arizona, who's 6-0 and is a world beater right now. And you know, but and they're not really putting away teams that have lesser records. So you know, what when you look at them in general, what are we just supposed to think about for the next week and a half here while we have no game to analyze?
Go look at the leaves or something. Yeah, just relax, smell the flowers. No, but I mean, look at like Cincinnati. I mean, that was a horrendous loss. Oh my God, they lost to Cincinnati. Well, Cincinnati is 4-2, and they're playing for first place in the best division of football at the AFC North this week. And then when we start projecting things, it's like with the Cowboys, you know, they're going to lose to the Cowboys because Cowboys are 5-1. Well, the Cowboys went to – I picked – that was my upset special was New England beating the Cowboys because I thought it would all – it was time for a readjustment of the perceptions in the NFL with the Cowboys.
You're damn close.
And other teams. What's that?
You were damn close at getting that one right.
Yeah. So – and they went – and they had to go to New England and play. So, you know – I definitely see that with that being a night game, you know, that crowd's going to be liquored up there, Joe. There's going to be a lot of IPAs digested by then. So, you know, that the crowd and the pass rush could make up a difference. And then you go to Baltimore. Okay. So Baltimore, you know, they needed a record field goal to beat the Lions. Whereas the Vikings only needed your traditional 54-yard. So, and then, you know, on the Monday nighter, they're getting completely outplayed by Indianapolis up until the NFL took over and they won the game at the end. So it's not like the Ravens are just in a, you know, this powerhouse that's going to beat them. And then the Chargers, look what happened to the Chargers this week where they, you know, they get shut down out there. I forget who they play as. I'm drawing a blank, but
the Ravens.
Yeah. So the Ravens beat them like 36 to whatever. And so the Ravens defense has been up and down. The Chargers offense is not, I mean, Justin Herbert finally looked like a guy that was in his second year. You know, this guy came out of the college throwing 300 yard games every week, it seemed, and looking extremely good. Well, you know, if you play right, have a good game, you know, you can win that game. So, and then, you know, it seems like Rodgers wins every, and Rodgers and Matt LaFleur win every NFC North game they play. But the one they lost was Zimmer playing with seven rookies at Lambeau Field last year and beating them. So, you know, it's like, I think, I don't know how many people use this quote. I didn't use it, but someone asked Dalvin about Dalvin Cook about the upcoming schedule. And Dalvin said, you know, they got to play us too, you know. And he's right. I mean, the Vikings have a lot to offer that I think when you're sitting there, you're looking at them really close, you say, well, yeah, they can't beat this team, they can't beat that team. But no, I mean, they got a lot of weapons and they showed and they're starting to show that offensively they got even more weapons than we thought coming into the season because KJ Osborne is a guy you have to account for now late in games. So you start looking at KJ and maybe, you know, they take a look. Not saying they'll cover double him over one of those other guys, but suddenly if it becomes single coverage everywhere, you know, you're going to see Thielen and Jefferson and those guys making plays or Dalvin taking advantage underneath.
That's interesting. So you're saying there's more of a chance that maybe we're dreading here with this next chunk of the schedule that looks pretty.
Yeah, I'm just saying that's like, okay, let's just take a look at an example of how people thought the first 4 weeks were going to go.
Yeah, that's true.
Cincinnati. Remember Arizona? They're not even third in their. They're like third in their division. They got to beat Cincinnati. They got to beat Arizona because those are winnable games. Those two teams now have 10 wins between them. Seattle. They can never beat Seattle. That's a loss. They come home and they crush Seattle. And then after that, it was the Browns, and we all knew they were going to lose to the Browns. And but it was a close game. So. It's just kind of like this, you know, we like to do it, but it just never seems to unfold the way we get our pencils in May and we follow the schedule. It just doesn't work that way.
You know, I excuse me, before I jump in deeper dive on the Cowboys coming up, I want to ask you, I forgot to ask you earlier, What did you think of Zimmer going for those 2-point conversions in the game? Shouldn't he have been taking kicking points that early in the game? I suppose Zimmer was thinking, you know, it's going to be a low scoring game with this group because they had a good defense coming in and Vikings have a pretty good defense coming in. What did you think of those decisions by the head coach?
Well, the first one was because there was a penalty. After Herndon's touchdown catch, there were the Panthers had a penalty, which puts the ball at the 1-yard line, which is a big difference. So they decided to go for it. I hated the call. They showed nothing to that point that they could just, you know, hand off and go right up the middle with Dalvin. I would have liked to have seen the ball in Kirk's hands or go to have Dalvin on the edge. You know, their best short yardage goal line plays are typically when it's a sweep or some sort of outside movement with Dalvin. Well, they just turned and handed to him, and he hit a brick wall, and he tried to bounce it around, and they dropped him, you know, before he got to the end zone. So I like going for it just because it's at the 1-yard line. Why not take advantage of it? I think you play differently when you're facing a Sam Darnold and you assume that he's going to play like not be the best quarterback you face. And then when they couldn't get it, they chased it the whole way. And then the second one, you know, I forget when that was. It was it 18 when they went up 18-17, I believe. So now you're trying to get it back to a 3-point game. So I don't blame them there. But yeah, once you do that early in the game, you kind of chase it. Just like when they lost a game where they're Joseph missed a extra point. They were kind of chasing that one. So yeah, it's when you miss it early, you're going to be chasing them. And a lot of people question, you know, they kicked 2 25-yard field goals in the first early in the game. It's like, well, you know, too conservative, right? Well, I always look at who are you playing. If you're playing Peyton Manning or Joe Montana or Tom Brady, I think you got to put your foot down and try and score there when you get that close to the goal line. When you're playing Sam Darnold without Christian McCaffrey, I'm okay with kicking the field goal. You know, just get some points, especially at the first one, because you have an interception on the first play of the game. To walk away with no points on the road with a defense like they have, I think would have been harder to overcome than just, you know, taking your lumps and kicking the field goal and taking your 3-0 lead. I think all this, I don't know if analytics, I'm not a bad big analytics guy, but it's like, I don't know how they factor in who you're playing or you know, where you're playing or, you know, there's no longer are there any like bad weather games. So it's not like weather, but like it depends on who you're playing at quarterback. I think when you make these risky decisions or if you play conservative.
You talked about that first one, the play to Dalvin. I didn't like to play either. And a buddy of mine emailed me this week and said Zimmer's got to develop some kind of option play, a pass for Dalvin Cook on those. And I thought that was pretty funny, but I don't think that's coming in anytime too to Zimmer's package, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, there's last year there were some 2-pointers or something, a goal line plays where they did get Dalvin on the edge real quick. It's not an option, but it's a pitch or whatever. Mm-hmm. It's just something to get him going, not just take advantage of his quickness side to side or take advantage of this quarterback who's playing lights out. Don't just turn and hand it. And if you're going to do that, then maybe why not a quarterback sneak? I don't know. The other play that almost got Dalvin killed at 6-yard was set up perfectly. A 6-yard loss where he got it hit him low and it looked like it was going to hurt his leg.
Yeah.
But if you go back and look at the replay, or if maybe you were watching it live, there's 4 offensive linemen and 1 linebacker standing there, and the linebacker just runs around all 4 linemen. It was every lineman except for O'Neal was standing right there, and the guy just ran around him.
Right.
And killed Cook on a 6-yard loss. So not sure what, you know, that's one of those where, you know, I didn't like the play call, but if they execute it, you know, maybe Dalvin goes for a touchdown. Who knows?
Could have, yeah. On to the Cowboys. And I got to put up my bias here before I ask this next question because I can't stand the Cowboys. Anybody that calls himself America's team has always got a problem with me. But
it wasn't a push-off, Joe. It wasn't a push-off.
Okay. Regret that remark. Now you just throw me off for the rest of the show. Now I got to go and start drinking.
We're dating ourselves on that reference, I think.
So. Oh, yeah, but not so much that I've forgotten it, because I certainly haven't. Anyway, every year with these dudes, the Cowboys, they're back. I don't know if it's Jerry Jones constantly talking about his team or whatever it is, but everybody's for the past 5-6 years the Cowboys are back, probably because they want them to be back for the whole media or the money, the revenue it'll bring into the NFL and the TV broadcast stations that cover them. I don't know, but it's possible that finally this year it isn't hype. I don't know. I guess I want to ask you that, but to be honest, I'm sick of talking about how great the Cowboys are, because they didn't show all that much their game against New England, and you rightly should have got the win on that one. That they should have lost that game, but they somehow came back and got it. What do you think? Is it hype? Are they for real? I know the offensive line is back, but
I mean, 5 or 6 years. I mean, the hype for the Cowboys has been since the 70s. I mean, since they were dubbed America's team. And, you know, 1995 was their last Super Bowl, I believe. And their playoff record since then is, I don't know, they haven't won, maybe, I don't know, I got to look it up, but maybe two playoff games, whatever.
How about them Cowboys? Yeah.
So they, you know, they do kind of force feed us to watch them a lot. If you're just watching regularly, if you just have regular cable or regular, if you don't have any NFL package, you know, you're forced to watch a lot of Cowboys. Well, you know, I do like how they're playing this year. And I do think that they showed I'm more impressed by that New England game than you are, because I saw it as a game where, okay, if the Cowboys aren't good, then they're going to lose this game. Well, they did what it took to win that game. They're trailing at halftime at Foxborough. I know it's not the same Patriots team, but it's still Bill Belichick with a really good defense. Belichick at home was, when he has the lead at halftime, was like 109-3. Now he's 109-4 because the Cowboys came back and Dak threw for like 445 yards, the most that Belichick defense has ever given up. So even though I picked them to lose, maybe that's why I'm more impressed with the fact that they won, because I just saw that as one of these NFL games where, you know, the NFL, it just corrects itself as it goes through the season typically. It's like, I thought, for the same reason why the Cardinals, I thought, would lose in Cleveland. I thought, you know, it's just time to kind of, everyone kind of gets toward the middle. As if you get too good, you're crowned early, and then you come back down. It's same as if you're playing a team that's not as good, they seem to rise. But the fact that the Cardinals and the Cowboys won those games, especially the Cardinals and how they won that game, tells me a lot about those two teams. And I think, you know, the Vikings obviously played the Cardinals pretty well. I know that defensively the numbers, you know, were 400 yards passing, whatever, but that's Kyler Murray, and they were in position to win that game. And I do think the Cowboys are kind of rolling. They can pass the ball, they can run the ball. They'll be a hard out. They'll be a hard team to beat. But I came away a little more impressed by that win and what they've done so far than you are.
What do you think of their defense? You know, they got the high-powered offense. You know, we got Ezekiel Elliott and the two receivers, CeeDee Lamb and Amari Cooper, that are going to be trouble for our slightly hobbled secondary. So we know about those guys. Dak Prescott has a calf injury, but he's got a week off here. He'll probably be better by that time. But what about their defense? The Vikings have played some tough defenses so far this year, and they've done pretty good against them. They've been in those games against them. Cleveland for one, this past weekend. Do the Vikings match up a little bit better there with the Dallas defense, you think?
Well, if I'm Kirk Cousins, I don't throw it anywhere near Diggs' little brother, because that guy, not only does he have nowhere to be, I know he gave up a touchdown after he had a pick six, but not only does he know where to be, he knows how to catch, and he knows how to move once he gets the ball. You watched that pick six last week or on Sunday. I mean, it's almost like he knew exactly where to go. He jumped over, he gets the interception, he jumps over a guy, and he's gone. And You know, he's got 7 interceptions in 6 games.
It's amazing.
The NFL record, which has stood since like 1957, is 14 interceptions. You know, this guy, he's got one, and he's got at least one in every game. He's got 2 pick sixes. I believe he might be the first NFL player either ever or in the Super Bowl era to have 7 through 6 games and multiple pick sixes. So if you look at how they played, I mean, last year, let's face it, Mike McCarthy didn't do himself any favor when he brought, you know, Mike Nolan out of – Mike Nolan hadn't coached in years. They brought him back the last year as defensive coordinator. It was horrible. They were horrendous defense. And it, you know, then Dak got hurt, and it was just a lost season. Well, you know, what they got going on now defensively is a big turnaround. They're better. And then they got, and when you get a playmaker like Diggs doing what he's doing, you know, they're not the best defense in the league, but they are far from where they were last year.
Yeah. He's going to threaten Paul Krause's record if he keeps up this pace, right?
Yeah, he's got a long way to go for that. One of the more amazing in a passing league. Obviously, the teams pass more than they've ever passed before, but you can tell how the efficiency of passing has just gone leaps and bounds forward in decades since Paul had that record, because the active leader is, you know, like in the 20s, and, you know, Paul Krause had 81 interceptions, and that's – if you want to talk about an unbreakable record, I mean, that's a record that I think will never be broken.
Right. Yeah, it's one of my favorite stories about that is back in the day when I used to go to watch the Vikings in Mankato, and it was the preseason training camp down there, and Krause was at the end of his career just hanging on, and he's playing way back in center field, you know, and all of a sudden someone throws overthrow, and Krause picks it off, and one of his teammates yells out, "That ties it," because he was one short of the record at that point. Yeah. And they were just trying to get him to move on and retire, but it was kind of funny at the time. Anyway,
yeah.
I know what I'm not picking the Cowboys, even though, you know, they could very well beat the Vikings. You're not going to hear me do that. So I think at home, like you were talking about earlier, I think the Vikings are starting to build a little confidence, build a little momentum maybe, and hopefully getting rested up. And their offense is going to be, I think, a little problematic for the Cowboys. But they just got to shut down Dak and Zeke and the boys, and I think they can sneak away with a win. How about you?
So we got to make a prediction this week?
Well, yeah. I mean, we're
you'll be golfing next week, next Tuesday?
That's the plan.
Yeah, what the heck. I'll go early. It's an early – I mean, this may change by the time I rethink it for the paper. But, you know, I'll probably go with the same situation. What I've been saying is that, you know, I think the Cowboys have now won 5 in a row. You know, where it's played, when it's a night game. I do think the Vikings will win this game. Now, what will they do after that? You know, to me, if you win this game, that's great. But then if you go and you lose 3 straight, it doesn't mean anything. So, I think this is a game where the NFL world kind of gets readjusted, and the Cowboys move a little notch closer to the pack, and all of a sudden now you're talking about the Vikings, you know, moving up. I mean, if you look at with you got 17 games, and now you got 7, the second year of 7 playoff teams. The Vikings right now are 3-3, are sitting in the 7th spot. I mean, they're kind of threatening to do what the Bears did last year. The Bears, you know, basically close to firing your coach and getting ready your quarterback, but can't do it because you got to go play a playoff game, you know. So there'll be a day probably when a 6-10 team makes the playoffs and the coach there's an interim coach for the playoffs, because it will have been fired between the playoffs and the end of the regular season. So this is what the NFL wants. They want to play more games. They want to let more people in. So you don't have to be a great team to get to the playoffs. Really, you don't have to be a great team to win at all. You got to be a good team that's hot at the right time. But definitely don't have to be a great team to make the playoffs.
You just got to make sure your goaltender's standing on.
Yeah, that's – yeah, just get a really big goaltender, Andre the Giant, set him right in front.
Well, that'll do it for the end of this segment. So we'll be coming back for one more segment inside the NFL, which is a little more important this week since we don't have a Vikings game to watch. So come on back for that. Welcome back to Vikings Territory with myself, Joe Oberle, and Mark Craig. And I'm looking at this setup here, and I can see that the light is with me, and you are from the dark side. You're just a little bit darker on my camera here. And you are not my father, Mark.
Joe, if there's one thing I've learned during the Zoom era, there's nothing I can do with my camera can make me look better. So I just whatever it is, it is.
We had Orson Welles a couple weeks ago, and now we've got Darth Vader, who likes to maim neighborhoods. Yeah.
You don't hear him barking anymore, do you?
I do not. Mark, we've got to start with the Packers again. They had a battle with the Bears, and it's always a battle. It doesn't matter where those teams are. They seem to duke it out because there's no love lost. The greatest, oldest rivalry in sports, I would say the Vikings-Packers one is more heated now, but that's another argument for another time. I think Aaron was pretty fired up for this one. He, after he ran in that final touchdown, and he said to the crowd, "I've owned you my whole life." You know, with a cut. I think he had
some.
So what did you think of that? Packers are you know, got a 2-game lead on both the Vikings and the Bears in the division.
I write for tomorrow's paper. I might even be out now. I said, Aaron Rodgers has put the I in team because he said, "I own you," and which he does. He owns it. But he's a guy whose cockiness matches his ability, his football ability. So it was a quote of the week. It was fun. You know, it was prompted by someone shooting him a double bird in the end zone. Some woman had shot him a double bird, and so he return fire, and I'd like to remind the whole NFC that he owns the whole division, because if you look at, there's a stat, and you know, the Packers do a great job with it. It's called the dope sheet that they put out every week. They've been doing it since the 20s. It's their PR release every week, and it takes two or three pages to tell all how dominant Aaron Rodgers is against the division. And there's like in 69 games against the NFC North, in games that he's thrown at least 15 passes and not had his collarbone broken by Anthony Barr, they are 53-15-1. And it's, so they're 23, including playoffs, they're like 23-5 against the Bears, like 20-3 against the Lions. And, you know, the Vikings are the one that's the closest, but it's like 15-8-1. So
you're killing me, Smalls.
Yeah. So, but you know, the Zimmer haters, you know, he's like 7-4-1 against Zimmer's teams when he's not had his collarbone snapped. So when he starts and doesn't have his collarbone snapped. So and Zimmer's the one, you know, that went, you know, like I said, he and Matt LaFleur would be 14-0 against NFC North teams, but Zimmer went in there and they pulled that upset last year at Lambeau, and it was one of only three losses that the Packers had. So he owns them all. He just probably doesn't own. There's a little piece of Minnesota that is still fighting back. So it's basically up to and he's got a 2-game lead now going into week 7. So it's kind of up to the Vikings. I don't think the Bears have the juice to do it. So he's going to win an 8th NFC North title unless the Vikings can come alive here.
Or unless they can Anthony Barr's back. They can put that snapping of the you know, the bone back in the plate. I know Aaron Rodgers thought it was on purpose, so anyway. Arizona and Cleveland, your thoughts, Mr. Ohio?
Well, I might have changed my pick if I would have realized that the entire Browns roster was out for the game. Both tackles out for the game. Nick Chubb was out. Hey, you can't – like Sid Hartman used to say, you can't lose. And then he would list all the players that were out. So it would take a long time to list all the Browns that were out or lost in that game. But, yeah, it's a good win for the Cardinals. You know, and – preseason, the Cardinals were kind of my surprise picks. It's in print, so there's evidence of it somewhere. I just feel like it's a good year for them. Now they could go on and lose every game now the rest of the way, but I just like how they play. I love their offense. And they were also missing their head coach with COVID. And Chandler Jones, I believe, was out with COVID. So they weren't exactly 100% either. So that's a big win. You know, they're the last undefeated team in the league. And I think that I forget who they play this week, but I looked it up, but they're going to be 7-0, I think. So, you know, who would have thought the Cardinals? I mean, last time they were 6-0, they were in St. Louis. And the last time they were 6-0 before that, they were in Chicago. So,
wow.
It's 3 6-0s in 100 years over three cities. So it's something that's pretty unusual for the Cardinals.
I know you throw out those injury excuses for your Brownies, but I think if we rewound this, I think you just said that the Vikings beat the Packers in Lambeau with 7 rookies starting. So I don't know if that's
your not starting. Not starting. 7 rookie defenders, yeah, at some point during that game. And that's when Harris was playing nickel corner by the end of that game.
Last night, Bills and Titans. I thought that was great fun. I was just happened to be playing my son in fantasy football, and I had Diggs and Derrick Henry going for me, and he had nobody and a big lead. And so it was great fun to watch that. Disintegrate and beat him.
Another game. That's another like NFL correction. I just don't know what else to call them, but NFL correction games where everyone thinks the Bills are going to win. Everyone thinks the Titans are done. And I picked the Titans to win. As much as I love Leslie Frazier and I wanted to see him win, you know, I just felt it's time. It's time for the Bills to lose and the Titans to kind of reassert who they are. So it's probably based more on just like emotion and like when someone's, you know, way up here, they tend to, you know, be overtaken by someone who's on their way back up. So this game is just not played on paper. It's just, this is a lot of, it's an emotional game. I definitely believe in bounce backs until like when the Lions, you know, the Lions have probably reached the point where you don't pick them because they're going to bounce back or whatever. But early in the year when the Lions were, you know, when you're making your picks and you're going, well, you know, I don't know, they played this team well and they might have some, you know, you reach a point where, you know, the bounce back dies out because you're 0-6 or, you know, to me, it's just a lot of this, the NFL, we just haven't seen a team like in a long time that you're just like, wow, they're going to line up and they're going to beat someone every week. They're going to threaten 15, 16 wins. You just don't see a whole lot of that.
What did you think of the final play? If you saw it, the Bills were moving in for the go-ahead touchdown or the tying field goal, and they were fourth and one at the two. They could have got a first down. 2 yards is a touchdown. And instead of kicking the field goal, send it to overtime, they run a quarterback sneak, and Josh Allen slips, and he's tackled short of both the first down or the touchdown, and they lose the game. It was quite amazing and very dramatic. It was, you know, it avoided yet another overtime game in this thus young season. So what do you think of that call and how it turned out?
Yeah, that's where the analytics tell you to do certain things. But, yeah, he did slip, right? There was a slip. You got to factor in, like, okay, he's a big quarterback. They can, you know, they've done this up to this point, but there's always that possibility of it. Maybe the snap is not clean or you slip or whatever. You know, I kicked the field goal. The longer I'm watching the league and the more you hear analytics there, the older I feel because I'm like, I take the field goal, and then put it into overtime.
I read somewhere too, and I kind of agree with you because, Bills were the better team. So go to overtime, regroup, and then prove it. I mean, I think they scored, probably had more yardage than the Titans did. The Titans were just kind of slugging back and hanging on, had a 76-yard touchdown from Henry that came out of nowhere and was kind of a fluky, lucky play because the rest of the time he didn't have a whole lot after that. But, I would agree with you, you know, kick the field goal and try your luck in overtime because they got such an offense going and a better.
Well, I'm not sure where he went, so we'll just wait and see if he pops back on. But
we were so close.
I know. Maybe he just went to his tea time.
Yeah, really. He might not know he's done, right?
No, I'm back.
Here he is.
I asked the question. I don't know if you heard me.
Hold on. Let me get back off, and then you can pick
it up. Are you sure? I mean, because I did not see the end of that game. I'm just go based on what you're saying. So there's definitely if they would have kicked the field goal, it would have
overtime.
Okay, all right. Because I was in and out, and I kind of woke up when it was like they were talking about it right at the end. So I didn't want to. So we wanted to make sure that's what. So I'm not blathering on about something.
Nope, they go, oh. You were right, and I agree with you. I don't know if you did. You hear my answer, Mike?
Yeah, we heard your answer. Then you went to ask another question and cut out. So if you just want to pick up there,
all right, I'll ask the question again. I was just going to talk Jacksonville getting off the schneid. If you saw that game,
okay, so. I'll hop off and keep going. You can start whenever.
Okay. I thought I had to wait for that.
Nope. Right. No, I'll just spice it back in.
All right. Mark, a couple more questions before we got to get out of here. Jacksonville got off the schneid over in London. Finally got a win, leaving the Lions as the only unwinned team. I'm not sure how you would say that. Anything to talk about there? Do you care? Urban.
Well,
I don't know. Or got a win.
Yeah. Poor London. I mean, another week of what London gets to watch. I give London or the NFL or however they put people in the stands over there. They seem to do it. I didn't notice the crowd, but I assume that they had a decent crowd. I would think that London would be getting tired of this by now. It used to be like a big festival and they'd all wear their different jerseys, and maybe they still do that, but boy, they're getting fed a lot of garbage. You know, if I'm Miami, I'd be feeling pretty bad. Jacksonville, you know, they could have beaten the Bengals. They dominated the Bengals. And if they went in to score a touchdown right before halftime against the Bengals to go up, they could have gone up 21-0, but they got stopped. And then the Bengals got the ball to start the second half, and then just the snowball effect, and they lost on a last-second field goal, of course. That's how all NFL games are decided now. But yeah, we're watching it in the press box. It's kind of nice to have that for that 9:30 game to see, but that's what the NFL wants. They want to probably just play around the globe where you'll have a game at 6 a.m., 9 a.m., noon, 3, 6, 9, all that stuff. So, I mean, I guess it's a good win for Jacksonville just because they were getting within striking distance of the 76, 77 Bucks. So they were within six games of that record. So when you lose 20 in a row, I suppose it's a good thing that you win once in a while.
Yeah.
Hire obviously is not, I mean, that's kind of a joke hire because he's not going to be around past this year. If he gets to the end of the year, that would be a miracle. I don't blame him for taking whatever money they threw at him, but you know, that's just kind of a ludicrous hire for the Jaguars because it has no future whatsoever. He's not going to be here next year or long term, so don't really get that one that higher. And I'd be feeling really bad if I'm Miami because it's just, you know, it doesn't get much worse than that.
Yeah, and they had some hopes coming into this season, you know. And the NFL wants to get a whole slate of games over in London, and now they're talking about Mexico City. And I don't know. I do like the early game, something to do on Sunday morning after Mass, of course, and. You know, you guys have Mass on in the press box, don't you? I'm sure you do. And so I do like that aspect of it, but you know, the games are usually somewhat inconsequential, and I don't know.
They're bad. You know, they can be good games, just bad teams. And yeah, you know, that's what when the NFL added that third game on Thanksgiving. I mean, that's people like that, but you know, for me, since 1988 or 89, I've watched Christmas Vacation on Thanksgiving Eve, so. NFL could have two undefeated teams, and I'm still watching Clark on Thanksgiving. And the Lions game, I don't know. I can't remember. Other than the t- time the NFL sent us to Detroit 2 years in a row for Thanksgiving.
Right.
I haven't paid attention to Lions on Thanksgiving in a while. So generally I'll be watching that Cowboys game and whoever they play until I fall asleep. But yeah, it's that they want to be able to play. They would love to be able to play twice a week and have games around the clock. So but they have managed to make everyone believe that, you know, there's a draft season, there's a free agency season, and that there's a 24/7, 365 season without playing games. So they still get their wish, everyone on a, you know, spindle all year long. But they would love to have that that 9:30 game every week, and they'd almost love to have every game every week, have a game in London, or put a team there. Well, I remember, you know, whenever the Vikings were over there the first time, and Jared Allen was asked about it, and you know, people don't realize all that goes into like going over there, just how taxing it is, just to go and watch the game. I can't imagine go and like play the game. And remember Jared Allen saying, "Heck, I wouldn't sign here if they, you know, for any amount of money, you know, to come play over there." So I don't think they'll ever get a team in London, at least not anytime soon. They've been kicked around for years, but can't see that happening at all.
Yeah, you probably don't need to watch the Lions this Thanksgiving either, the way they're playing.
Probably not. I might watch Christmas Vacation twice this year.
There you go. Do you have any plans? Do you see anything coming up on the schedule this weekend without the Vikings playing that you're going to focus on? I mean, certainly you want to check out any NFC North games that are being played. At least I do. But anything else tickle your fancies, or just whatever's showing on the tube?
Well, Thursday, you know, the Browns and the Broncos. That might be Case Keenum playing. I mean, Baker Mayfield, that left shoulder keeps getting ripped out of its socket. Short week. So then the Broncos were 3-0. Now they're 3-3 and looking terrible. So that'd be a game that I'll like. And then see the Bengals play the Ravens for first place in the AFC North. The Bengals are. The Bengals are announcing that they've arrived, and the Ravens are kind of announcing, "Hey, we're not going anywhere." Right. So, for years we've watched, people have watched Baltimore and Pittsburgh fight it out. I think the Bengals are going to get involved here because that offense is exciting. Burrow to Chase combination is fantastic, but I think their defense is underrated. The Vikings had a taste of that defense. They're not bad. They're definitely not Cincinnati like. So kind of fun to see some new blood in a big game. That's probably the game of the week because that's the going for first place in the AFC North. That's a division, big game in that division.
They should have beat the Packers a couple weeks ago, and I'd be more happy about talking about the Bengals. But whatever. I just want to say we won't be back next week because there won't be any Vikings game to analyze, but we'll be back in 2 weeks to talk about the Halloween game between the Cowboys and the Vikings, which should be very exciting, a very good game, and fun to talk about. I want to make sure all of our listeners and watchers or what have you know that there were no dogs injured in the making of this podcast. I especially want Pete to know that. So we kid. But
I don't hear him barking anywhere. So I'll take your word for it.
I hope not, because they'll be sending people your way very, very soon. But thanks for listening. Thanks for checking us out. And I hope you continue to do so. Thanks, Mark. Thanks for Mike Woldum for the production in the background. And we'll see you in a couple weeks when we start it up again. Hopefully it's another win 3 in a row for the Vikings. Thanks, and talk to you then. Skol.